Terrible. So we start a new Mishnah tonight in Mirtz Hashem on Daf Ches Amud Beis. And the Mishnah itself is somewhat ambiguous. The Gemara is going to explain the Mishnah in great detail. The language of the Mishnah is as follows. Ha'av gole al yidei ha-ben. Which literally means that if a father kills his son inadvertently, b'shogeg, he goes into golus. Oh, he just spoke about you. Only good things. Now, this opening line in the Mishnah is very problematic because the maskana of the last sugya that we had, Adav Chesam and Aleph, is that if a father is teaching his son, and within that context he hits his son and inadvertently kills him, the father does not go into golus. And the reason for that is because it's not duya diyar, chativas eitzim, which is reshus, but a father has a mitzvah to hit his son. And since he has a mitzvah in doing so, it's not considered like chativas eitzim, which is a reshus. Here, on the other hand, the Mishnah is establishing that a father who kills his son does go into golus. So we'll see about that in the Gemara. Then it says, Haben gola al yidei ha'av, that if the son kills his father, this sounds like a Shakespearean tragedy, then the ben, the rotzeach, actually goes into golus, and we'll see that that's also a pretty sensational chiddush. Then the Mishnah continues, Hakol golim al yidei Yisrael. In other words, anyone who kills a Jew goes into golus. And we'll see what the chiddush of that is. And Yisrael golim al yideinam. And whoever that hakol comes to include, if that person is killed by Yisrael, then Yisrael will go into golus. So we'll see who that anonymous person that the Mishnah is alluding to is. Chutz mi ger toshav. This Mishnah introduces the sugya of ger toshav. We'll say a few words about ger toshav. The real sugya in its original Ger Toshav is in Masechta Sanhedrin, and it also appears in a small form in Masechta Ksuvos. Here it's a pretty major sugya in Masechta Makos. We want to know the status of a Ger Toshav as far as golus is concerned. And when the Mishnah says Chutz mi Ger Toshav, it seems to exclude a Ger Toshav from golus, which would mean that even though Yisrael who kills the Yisrael goes into golus, but in the case of a Ger Toshav who kills the Yisrael, he does not go into golus. Which would seem to imply that the status of a Ger Toshav is that of a non-Jew of a good.
What is a Ger Toshav?
So what is a Ger Toshav? So basically we have three categories. There's Yisrael, there's a Goy, and there's a Ger Toshav. A Goy is obligated in seven mitzvahs, whereas Yisrael in 613. A Ger Toshav, like a Goy, is obligated only in seven mitzvahs. But the difference between a Ger Toshav and a non-Jew, a regular Goy, is that in the case of a Ger Toshav, he accepts those Zion mitzvahs in front of a Bezdin Shel Yisrael. He comes in front of a Jewish court, and he undergoes a quasi-gerus. It's not a full-fledged gerus, there's no tefillah. But there is Kabbalah's old mitzvahs, but not 613. He's Makabal on himself seven mitzvahs. And the Rambam in Hilchus Malachim adds the condition that he states he's accepting upon himself these seven commandments because it was given by Almighty God to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. That declaration gives him the status of a ger.
A Ger Toshav, it's the fact that he also lives in the land.
No,
can there be a Ger Toshav outside?
Anyway,
land?
But the significance of being Ger Toshav is we're going to allow him to live in the land. You know, whereas we don't give Chanoya to a non-Jew, but in the case of a Ger Toshav, we could invite him to live in the land. Oh, Shalom Aleichem, man. Good to see you. But not only do we invite a Ger Toshav to live in the land, and that himself makes him a sort of part of the family, part of the clan of the Jewish nation, in an extended form, he's on the periphery, but he's still part of the Jewish nation. In addition to that, and that's the sugya at the end of the first parak of Ksuvos, there's an obligation lahachyoso. In other words, when the Torah says, we had it last Shabbos, v'chei achicha imach, and that you have to give life which means to support financially someone who's down and out, the word achicha in that context includes even a Gerut Hosha. So, for example, you may know that Meir Kahane, Zichrono Levracha, was opposed, you know, to letting Arabs live in this country. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. But he would have to agree that a Ger Toshav would be allowed to live in the land, and moreover, the Ger Toshav would have to be supported by us if he's impoverished. So in many senses, a Ger Toshav is considered like a Jew, but on the other hand, he doesn't have a full-fledged Kedushas Yisrael. His Geirus is not complete. His obligation is limited to the same identical seven mitzvahs of a guy who did not undergo Geirus, meaning he did not accept upon himself in front of a Beis Din the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach.
Meir Kahane actually fought that every Arab living here should go through this process or out.
Okay, so that makes sense. You know, you know what I mean? But how many Arabs are going to become Geirim Toshavim? You know, that's kind of rare. There's a whole sugi also in Pesachim about Geir Toshavim with regard to his chametz. For example, if let's say you have a Geir Toshavim in your employment and he has chametz in his possession, this Geir Toshavim, the question is whether that, in some sense, because of the relationship between the Yisrael and the Ger Toshav, incriminates the Yisrael based on the ownership of the Chametz on the part of the Ger Toshav. But just in a word, what we could say is that in Hilchas Gerus, we have three different levels of Gerus. The lowest level of Gerus is that of a Ger Toshav, accepts upon himself seven mitzvahs. The next level of Gerus is called an Eved Kenani. An Eved Kenani accepts upon himself those mitzvahs that an isha, that a woman is obligated. Until we have a full-fledged Ger Tzedek who accepts the whole kit and caboodle, all the 613. With regard to an Eved Kenani, after the Eved Kenani becomes freed, that's called Shichrur, then it could be that his Gerus now automatically expands. He doesn't have to undergo another Gerus in order to accept upon himself the full-fledged Kedushas Yisrael, incorporating all the mitzvahs. Other Rishonim, the Ramban, for example, is of the opinion, in that's the sugya of Masechet Yevamos, that the Eved Kenani, when he gets freed, he needs a second Gerus. He may need Hatofas Dam Bris, in the case of Mil, but more fundamentally, he needs another Tevilah and Mikvah, and that has to happen in front of a Beis Din in order to expand and complete his Kedushas Yisrael, which is truncated, because he doesn't have a mitzvah of man, he has a mitzvah of an isha.
And just like full Gerus, there's no going back? By Ger Toshav, right. There's also no going back?
No, it's an irreversible process. So what's the status of a Ger Toshav as far as Shgaga is concerned in the case of a Rotzeah? Does he go into Golus or not? Now, if we read the Mishnah at, you know, carte blanche, you know, superficially, and you get the impression that according to the Mishnah, a Ger Toshav is not a Yisrael, right? Chutz mi Ger Toshav. So it means that if a Ger Toshav murders a Jew, he doesn't go into Golus. But the Mishnah doesn't spell out, so what's the alternative? And that's what we're going to have to see in the Gemara. But then the last line in the Mishnah takes Ger Toshav and puts him back into the Parsha of Golus. And the closing line in the Mishnah is Ger Toshav eino gola ella al yidei Ger Toshav. So it's interesting. It's an Einsteinian theory of relativity. You know, what is the status of a Ger Toshav? And it's relative. Relative to Yisrael, he has the status of a guy. And therefore, if he kills the Yisrael, this Ger Toshav, he doesn't go into Golus. But relative to his own kind, to another Ger Toshav, if he murders another Ger Toshav, he does go into Golus. Which means it's unfair and inaccurate to say that a Ger Toshav is mufka from the concept of Eir Miklat. In fact, if you walk into an Eir Miklat, you might very well meet a Ger Toshav there. But you'll know that he killed another Ger Toshav. He did not kill Yisrael. All right, now the Gemara is going to analyze the Mishnah bit by bit, piece by piece. So let's go straight to the Gemara. The Gemara says the following. Ha'av gola al yidei ha-ben. So the father killed the son, and now the father goes into Golus. So Amrit, we just finished saying in the sugya on Daf Ches Amud Aleph, Yotza ha'av Hamaka es bino, that we exclude the case of a father who kills his son as a result of hitting him. Now wait a second, my bosai. Is there a simple answer to this problem? When did, under what conditions, under what circumstances do we say that a father, when he hits his son and kills his son, does not go into Golos? What element do you have to, when there's a mitzvah, correct? So what happens if his father is inadvertently kills his own son, the tragedy of tragedies, but there was no mitzvah going on? So the Aruch HaLener, says what Aaron said, that clearly if he's not involved in a mitzvah at all, then he certainly goes into Golos. There was no need for the Mishnah to tell me a chiddush that a father who kills his son goes into Golos. There's no reason why I would exclude the father unless he's involved in a mitzvah. It's not dumya b'chativ zaytzi. But the Aruch HaNer asks a different question. He thinks he's come up with a different creative solution to the Gemara's problem to reconcile the stira between the sugya on Amud Aleph and the Mishneh on Amud Beis. He says, why not suggest the following? The law of chinuch, meaning the framework within which a father gets a mitzvah for hitting his son, is up to a certain age. Let me explain. A father doesn't hit his son, you know, the Gemara derives from Yasrecha, to be Miyaser, his son, as part of Tochacha, if the son is mature. Now, exactly what age makes him mature in this context is somewhat of a controversy. The Aruch HaNer assumes, again, what his sources are, I don't know, that it's the age of 24. And now, watch this. A father does not have a mitzvah to hit his son, even in order to give him, you know, to castigate him and put him in line, if he's 24, if the son is 24. But not, it's more than that. Not only is the father, so to speak, alleviated of this mitzvah of hitting his son, it's more than that. It's an Isur. Exactly. Because once the son stands on his own two feet and he's mature, he may be tempted, almost as an automatic knee-jerk response, to hit his father back. So the father is now putting the son into a precarious situation which might tempt the son to hit his own father. And if a son hits his own father, I mean, again, depending upon whether he wounds his father or not, but that certainly is, if it's not a capital crime, because he didn't wound him in such a way, but it's definitely a violation of a very, very severe Yisur D'oraisa. So the Aruch HaNer comes up with this creative solution to the problem. Maybe the Sugya Daf Ches Amud Aleph, which alleviates the father who hits his son from Golus, is talking about a case where the son is less than 24 years old. And maybe this Mishnah is talking about a case where his son is above 24 years old. And here, Aaron, is where the Aruch HaShulchan spells out your svar from before. He says that's a milsa de pshita. The only havamina that we would have to entertain an exemption of the father from Golos is only when he's doing a mitzvah. If his son is so mature that not only is there no mitzvah, there's even a violation, because he hit his son who was 24 years old and up, then for sure the father goes into Golos. And what was the havam? So here the Gemara comes up with a very creative idea. We're looking now, again, if you're with me, we're looking for what I call a twilight zone. You know, it's something that could be called a mitzvah, and therefore we'd exempt the father from Golos if he killed the son, but it's not really a mitzvah, and therefore the father does go into Golos. That's what we're trying to pinpoint. So the Gemara answers, Degamir. Degamir means that the son is behaving properly. There's no need to castigate him. There's no need to use the rod to bring him back and make sure he's within the fold and he's behaving properly. So therefore, ostensibly, there's no mitzvah for the father to hit him. So the Gemara immediately rejects this. For Amr, we just finished saying, again, for those who were with me last time in the Gemara Daf Ches Amud Aleph, the Afal Gav to govern mitzvah ka'avid. That hitting a son is not a means to an end, as we discussed in great length, but it's an end unto itself. It's a mitzvah unto itself. So therefore, even if his son was gamir and he's walking a straight path, he's in line, nevertheless there would still be a mitzvah for the father to hit him, and therefore again, if inadvertently he killed his father, his son, he, the father, would not go into Golos. Oh. Now here's the creative solution. But rather it's a case of shulya b'shulya dinagri. Now look, they're both going out to the forest and they're cutting down trees. right? Let's assume the father's cutting down trees professionally, meaning that's his occupation. You know, you pay people a good deal of money to cut down trees. First of all, it's a skill, it's time consuming, it's a little bit dangerous when you climb up a tree, and you need physical strength. So there's a whole art, you know, and it's a whole profession to cut down trees. Why was the father together with his son in the forest? He was teaching his son the profession. Now here we get into a very interesting question. What's the status of the responsibility of a father to teach his son a profession?
It's a mitzvah, no?
It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah unto itself. Rashi quotes a Gemara Kiddushin here to establish that this is a mitzvah. Okay, wait, you know what? We still have to go one more line before we appreciate the Rashi. So the Gemara says, Bishulya Dinagri. Shulya is a student or a disciple, what word am I looking for?
Apprentice.
An apprentice, excellent, thank you very much. An apprentice of an agar, right? Of a carpenter. So the father is teaching his son how to become a carpenter. And in this teaching, in this learning, there's no mitzvah. And if there's no mitzvah. So again, you'll ask me, so my kamashma is no mitzvah. But here it's a very sharp gemara, because the gemara is telling you that even though the father is responsible to make sure that his son has a livelihood, and therefore he's teaching him nagarut, nevertheless, it's not called a mitzvah. That's a pretty important chiddush. It's almost as if the Gemara is postulating a difference between, shall we say, a religious teaching and a secular teaching. Even though a secular teaching also comes within the scope of the father's responsibility, but it's not the same as religious training. Religious, I mean moral training. So in moral training, we have the pasuk. Let's go back to the Afches Amud Aleph, so I don't misquote the pasuk. Where is it? Of course, when I want to find it, I don't see it.
Chastising, right?
Yeah. What was the exact question of the pasuk in Mishlei? If I remember correctly,
here.
I'm sorry. It's
Mishlei 29.
Yeah, it's here on Amud Beis. My mistake. I keep quoting Ches Amud Aleph. It's Ches Amud Beis, right before the Mishnah, and it says Yaser. Right? Oh, look who's here. Yaser bincha v'yanichecha. And let's just read the pasuk in its full blown in the Torah. Or Yaser bincha v'yanichecha v'yitein madanim l'nafshecha. So does that apply outside of the realm of moral training? And the Gemara now is assuming not. And right now the Gemara is going to take that to task. The Gemara is going to attack that premise. Shulya denagri chiyusehi delamde. After all, the father is teaching his son an umnus, and he's guaranteeing that the son will have an opportunity to make a parnasa, and that's called a mitzvah. And Rashi here tells you that chiyusehi ve'afzu mitzvah ala avlo lamdo the alfinile mikra. The Perek HaMed, because the Gemara at the beginning, at the end of the first Perek of Kiddushin, derives from a pasuk that just like you have to find a wife for your son, you also have to find an umnus for your son. Rashi spells it out, kishem sha'oviv chayv la'asiyo isha, on the first of the white lines, kidichsiv ukhu lebinchem nashim kachayv lelamdo umnus. So the whole premise of this Gemara now has to be thrown overboard, because at the end of the day, Shulya Denagri, teaching his son Rumnus, is identical to moral training. In both cases, it's a mitzvah, therefore there's no Chiyuv Golos. It's not Duvya Diyah. So the Gemara answers, and again, it's going to have to be a Chiddush here, Degamir Umnusa Achriti. The father has already fulfilled his obligation with regard to one Umnus, and now the father is teaching his son a second umnus. Now, that certainly expands the son's possibility of landing a good job, because now he has two professions. But nevertheless,
it's no longer a mitzvah.
It's no longer a mitzvah. I would say that perhaps it comes under a kiyum mitzvah, but it's not a full-fledged mitzvah. In other words, the father is not obligated. No one can say that if a father did not teach his son a second umnus, he was derelict in his responsibility, and therefore, since it's not an absolute obligation incumbent upon the father in this case, therefore, if inadvertently he kills his son, he goes into gulfs.
If you'd say that, then also certainly hitting a son, the father is not obligated to hit his son.
He's obligated. Gemara calls it a mitzvah.
Even if he was already learning, the kid's fine.
Even if he's a bad parent, if you're not hitting your perfect son. So, John, we had a whole long discussion about this last week. Do you remember this?
Last week you didn't go so far as to say it would be a mitzvah.
I meant to, if I didn't. I could play back the tape because I hate the shir. You know? Seriously, John, don't you remember?
I can understand it's a kiyum mitzvah, but saying that
it's a kiyum. It's a mamash kiyum. And that's why, if you remember the Gemara, the case of hitting your son is not similar to the case of cutting down trees for a sukkah for the Yatzim Arocha. The Gemara asked, but wait a minute. In the case of sukkah, in the case of marocha, isn't there a responsibility and obligation to cut down trees, to build the sukkah, to set the fire on the mizbeah? So the Gemara says it's different there. Because if someone provides you, supplies the sukkah, the wood for the sukkah, the wood for the marocha, there's no mitzvah. So the Gemara asks, if that be the case, if your son is learning and he's within his the purview of towing the line, as we'd say, then there's no mitzvah. The Gemara says, no, there's a mitzvah nevertheless. And if you want to see it, Jonathan, it's right here in the Gemara. Right? The Gemara says that it's an independent mitzvah. It's mamish a mitzvah. Even if he's gomer. Okay? So that's what I'm saying now, that in the case of teaching your son the first round of umnus, yes, that's an absolute key. And if he kills him then, the Gemara says he doesn't go into gulfs. But if he's teaching him a second umnus, to have a spare, a fallback, default position, that's already not within the purview of a chiyu. The father is exempt from doing so, and it becomes dumya de chatibasins. The fascinating thing is that the Gemara never questions the premise that once the Gemara in Kiddushin derives that a father is to teach his son umnus, that elevates the teaching of the father to his son in umnus to the level of yaser bincha, meaning that if the son is not learning his skills, his profession properly, the father has an obligation to hit him. In other words, again, I grant you that the Gemara Kiddushin establishes and derives that a father has to teach his son umnus. I'm not clear where in the Gemara Kiddushin does it say that the father has to hit his son. And here I would postulate that if, according to the Gemara, there's a mitzvah to hit your son while you're teaching him an umnus, it would only apply if he's not studying properly. You follow what I'm saying? Now there's bishlam with moral training. The Gemara establishes that's a mitzvah unto itself, an end unto itself of hitting your son, up to the age of 24, of course, right? But with regard to teaching your son an umnus, even if I grant you there's a mitzvah on the father to hit his son within the context of teaching an umnus, but medvar amun, that only applies if need be. That's what I would have said. I don't know. It's very difficult in the Gemara to say what I'm saying, but
I understood the Gemara was talking about a case where they're teaching carpentry. It wasn't that they just teach a profession, specifically carpentry, where it's dangerous. That it was a
oh, you mean he killed it with the axe or something?
Yeah, it was a carpentry axe.
Okay, could be. Could be. Let's see. Does Rashi say anything? Let me just see. Rashi doesn't say anything. Could be. Maybe you're right. Wow. So you have to write I have to write a letter to Masifta. Masifta is a great contribution, but he writes here, Kishamakeu Kideshi Lamdo Umnus. Hareza mitzvah, v'eino go al yada. And Jonathan is saying, no, who told this Masifta Perish that we're talking about Makeu? Maybe it's not so. Maybe the Gemara is talking about that he's teaching him carpentry, and in so doing, there was a terrible accident that took place, and the son tragically died. Good point. Touché. We'd have to research it further because maybe the Masifta got it from somewhere.
Here,
what does he have?
This is the article.
What is he in?
He says he's forcing him to learn a second trade.
Oh, I see.
So there is some.
So
kind
he's
of
also learning about it. That he's beating up his son. Okay. So I don't know where they all get this from, because logically, I think Jonathan is right. There's no need to say.
Oh, it's literally, it's just, since he has the means to support himself, the father is not performing any mitzvah by forcing him to learn a second trade.
Correct. Does he quote anyone? Or?
No.
Okay, so we don't know where the source for that
is. Did he context from the previous Mishnah?
No, I understand, but it doesn't have... I'm just saying it doesn't have to be so. It doesn't have to be so. All right, let's go on. Then the Mishnah says, HaBen Gola Al Yidei Ha'av. Why would we think otherwise? This is going to be a tremendous chiddush, that if a son kills his father, then the son goes into Golos. In fact, the Gemara immediately rejects this Mishnah by quoting a Braisa. Ramini, I'll ask you a contradiction from a Braisa. The Braisa derives from a pasuk in the parasha of Ir Miklat. The Torah says, I'll read to you the first part of the pasuk. It says, Lanus shama kol make nefesh bishgaga. That this city of refuge is designated for anyone who kills nefesh, make nefesh. What is the significance of the word nefesh? I understand what it means, make, I understand what it means, bishgaga, but what's make nefesh? So the Braisa establishes make nefesh prat to exclude make aviv, meaning if the son hit his father and accidentally killed his father, he doesn't go into Golos. And that's excluded under the pasuk make nefesh. Now, obviously, the question is, what does make
normally excludes an uber?
Right, but what does make nefesh have to do with a son hitting his father? Correct.
It's the opposite. Notice, if you hit somebody where you don't kill him, you have a very big penalty. Right.
Right. So we'll see in Rashi that the implication is that he's chayav golus because
he killed him.
And had he not killed him, he would not be chayav golus. Let's see the Rashi inside. Prat lamake aviv, the second of the wide lines. You have it? Shalo chayav golus el misha haka'oso tluya benefesh. Now, the reason why there's a chiyuv engendered here is because he killed him. She'edo chayav olav ella im kein harga. So maka nefesh means he's chayav because he killed him. Had he not killed him, he would not be chayav. I mean, why did the Torah have to spell that out? Why would I think that he would be chayav if he didn't kill him? Yotza, it's coming to exclude maka aviv. Shu chayav olav misa. Even if he doesn't kill him, bechavur v'yal.
Just a wound.
Just a wound. So the Gemara thinks that this pasuk is coming to exclude a situation in which the son killed his father b'shogeg from Golos. He's excluded from Golos. Because the scenario which is being described in great detail by the Torah in the parasha of Golos is a scenario in which because he killed him, therefore he's chayav, meaning had he been mazed, he would be chayav misa, it's a capital crime. Now that he's a shogeg, the Torah adds b'shgaga, he runs into the Ir Miklat. But it's only because he killed him. To the exclusion of what? Where else would you have a chiyuv rotzeach if you didn't kill the guy? I mean, that sounds like a joke. How could you be a rotzeach if you didn't kill him? The answer is that the Torah treats a son who hits his father, wounds him, doesn't kill him, as if he killed him. He's chayav a capital punishment.
Only be kavanah.
But again, this parsha is telling you that if he did it b'mezid, if somebody wants to be kind enough to open up a chumash, it's probably worthwhile seeing this inside. We're in Bamidbar Lamed Hey Pasuk Tezvah. There should be chumashim right around here, no? Or in the back.
The wounding.
But again,
is to be mosi even if you're mosi dam.
Correct, but
so it's not the normal pasuk of makay avizim or mosi mos is not talking about murder.
For sure not. For sure not. But when the Torah speaks about murder, the Torah makes this following distinction. There's a case of makeh nefesh bishkaga, and there's a case of makeh nefesh b'mezid. So we have to decide what is the context of this parasha. And Rashi says that the context of the parasha is a situation which, because it was shkaga, therefore he goes into golus. Had it been mezid, he would get misa. And now the Torah adds the word nefesh to teach you that in this case, he would only be chayav misa if he killed him. Make nefesh. Again, let's read the Rashi again. I think, Rabbi Sachtus, you don't have a Gemara.
No.
Did we run out of Gemara here tonight?
I don't see the finish here.
No, but it's important to read the Rashi inside, because otherwise you're going to accuse me of creating this whole thing. Let's read the Rashi again inside. Just 1 second, let me read just the Pasuk, so we have the Pasuk. Lamed Hei Tesva. Okay then. So it says the following. Sheish ha'arma ilu l'mikot. Right, so fine. Lonu shama kol makeh nefesh bishgaga. And then in the very next pasuk, the Torah says, but if he kills him b'mezid, most yuma sarotzeh. So the Gemara is, this brisa that we're learning now, according to our sugya, is analyzing these two psukim as a unit. And we're talking about rotzeach, whether it be a rotzeach bishgaga, where he goes into one of the six Ari Mikot, where he's a rotzeach b'mezid, where he gets killed. That's the subject of this parasha. And now the brisa wants to understand, why did the parasha have to add the word nefesh? So let's read Rashi. Rashi says, Prat lemake oviv. Why? Shalochayev golus el misha haka'oso tluya b'nefesh. Meaning the Torah is adding a stipulation that the reason why through this hakah the makeh is chayev golus b'shogeg, or alternatively misa b'mezid, because again that's also part of this parasha, is because somebody died. As if to say that this parasha is curtailing einu chayev ela im kein hargo, that there could be a punishment, again, whether it's mezid or shogeg, because the parasha is including both, if and when, as a result of this criminal act, somebody died. Why did the Torah have to point that out? Isn't that obvious? Yotzah is coming to exclude makeh oviv, because in the case of makeh oviv, his status as a criminal, and therefore the punishment that he incurs of misa, of capital punishment, is not at all dependent upon nefesh. Meaning, the Torah says that this parsha of shogeg mezid, of mos yumos, and yonos liira miklot, is contingent upon the fact that through his hakah he incurs a chiyuv misa, because his hakah led to the death of the person. He dealt a death blow to that person, to the exclusion of someone who could be chayav and would be chayav, despite the fact that he didn't deal a death blow to his victim. And that's the case of makeh oviv, shu chayav olav misa b'chabura b'yam. Because salka daitach, and now the Gemara understands this price is telling us, d'memayit le'migolus, that the Torah is trying to exclude the son from golus, afilu hargo, even though he killed his father. Okay then? So that's the Gemara's question now, that there is a contradiction between our Mishnah, which says Haben Gola Al Yudei Ha'av, and the Brisa, which says Makeh Nefesh Prat LeMakeh Oviv. Omar Rav Kahana Lo Kashya. Okay, so now Rav Kahana is going to reconcile these two, the Brisa and the Mishnah. Okay, this is a bit complicated, so bear with me. Ha, the Brisa itself, Rabbi Shimon, is authored by Rabbi Shimon. For ha, our Mishnah, Rabbanan, reflects the Shita of the Rabbanan. What's the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbanan? Li Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion of Masechta Sanhedrin that chenek chamor misayif, Right, amongst the Mises Bezdin, we want to turn our attention to two out of the four, namely Chenek and Sayiv, and we want to compare them. Which one is considered more chomer? Now, keep in mind that if a son kills his father b'mezid, right, or if he wounds his father b'mezid, in both cases, his misa is chenek. A normal rotzeach who kills someone other than his father is chayev sayef. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon postulates that the Torah is more machmir in the case of a criminal act of a son vis-a-vis his father than in the case of the same identical act of someone who perpetrates that crime against someone who's not his father. So on the scale of chumrah, the avera and the punishment thereof of a son vis-a-vis his father is more severe than someone who kills someone else. Because if Reuben kills Shimon, who's a stranger to him, I mean, he's not his relative, he's not his father, then Reuben will be put to death by what? Sayiv. If Reuben kills his father Shimon, he'll be put to death by Chenek. Why? Because Chenek is the explicitly stated punishment for Maka Aviv, and when he kills his father, that's Maka Aviv plus, so we're not going to alleviate his punishment of Chenek. So through this act of murder of a son to his father, he's Chayev Chenek. That's a worse punishment, reflecting on a more severe crime, than that of Reuben who kills Shimon, who's a stranger to him, who's only Chayev Sayev. That's according to Reb Shimon, because Chenek is more chomer than Sayev. And now, let's say Reuven kills his father inadvertently, and should he go into Golos? The answer is no. Why? Says the Gemara. Shigigas Sayif nitna l'kapara, shigigas Chenek lo nitna l'kapara. The Torah says, in the case of Shogeg, when a person kills someone other than his father, that's the parish of Shogeg. It's not talking about a son who killed his father. And the Torah says that he gets kapara from Golos if he killed that person b'shogeg. That's because the avera is such, had it been done b'mezid, it would incur a chiyuv sayiv. So if it was done b'shogeg for that very same avera, it deserves, or it lends itself to the kapara of ir miklat. But shigeas chenek, meaning this avera in which a son kills his father, is a more severe avera than the stam, you know, the general case which is addressed by the parish of Golos. So therefore, if he killed his father b'shogeg, the avera is so chomer, haraya, had he done it b'mezid, he'd be chayev chenek, which is more chomer than sayev. That avera doesn't lend itself to kapara.
How do you know that Golos only applies to sayev and not by chenek?
Because the parish is addressing the classical case.
Okay.
So the classical case, had he done it b'mezid, what would be the measure of his punishment? Sayif. So if he does b'shogeg, he's what's called a shigiga sayif. Shigiga sayif.
How do you know there's this distinction when it comes to...
No, in general, in kapara...
How do you know the boas doesn't apply to any type of...
Because, again, ein lecha boel v'chidush, or does the Torah allow this rotzeach, because he was a shogeg, to achieve goals by living out his life in the year Miklat? The Torah did not
about the Ben.
But in the case of a Ben who implemented a more severe crime, who says that the Torah is going to allow him that luxury, you know, give him that bonus of achieving kapara in his life by living out his life in the year Miklat? We have no right to go beyond the chiddush of the parasha. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is that Sayif is going to be the ceiling. An avera of sayif allows you a kapara, but if your avera is more severe, you know, it's hard. You know, for you and I, it's hard to envision a more severe crime than ritzicha. But the answer is, in the case of a son vis-a-vis his father, that's even a more severe crime than regular ritzicha. And therefore, the Torah is not going to afford you with the benefit and to enjoy the kapara of the year miklat.
I don't know the source for that distinction.
It makes sense logically.
I think the Gemara is just saying as far as I know.
It's a question of if I kill somebody, b'shogeg,
right?
It's done bishogeg. Whether it's a father or anybody else, it's bishogeg. And I don't see a distinction.
Right, so the Torah is saying that for that shogeg, in a certain avera, we're going to afford you with the opportunity to be miskapa. Through what? Through goats. Because this avera reaches the level of ritzicha, in a stam ritzicha, which is a chiyuv sayit. But if you do an avera of a more severe nature, we're not going to give you, for the violation of that avera that's so severe, the opportunity to achieve goals. You know, it's very strange. When we look at a punishment in the Torah, we see it as pure negative. But it's not so. There's a flip side. Because every punishment, by definition, which is meted out by the Torah, also has a flip side, has a positive side. It guarantees you kapara. You remember, perhaps, when we discussed back on Daf Hey, the sugya of Ein Onshin Min Hadin. And we quoted the Marsha's famous principle. Why is Ein Onshin Min Hadin? I mean, not only did he have relations with his half-sister, he had relations with his full sister. And yet we're not going to punish him? Again, it's a special limud that we do, but I'm just saying Ein Onshin Min Hadin. So the Marsha says, because every punishment guarantees you what? A kapara. And the Torah only gives you a kapara if you did a lowish echelon crime. If you did a more severe crime, we cannot let you avail yourself of that kapara.
Agree. Except that's only the mezid. Once you're not dealing with mezid, sayif and chenek no longer applies.
No, but again, sayif and chenek are only barometers to measure, to evaluate the nature of the avera. The shogeg is an avera b'shogeg. And the golus is the kapara for that avera b'shogeg. So I'm only using mezid to reflect on the nature of the avera. Once I use that tool, and I conclude that in the scale of averas, father is worse than an alien, right? And than a non-relative. And why is that so? How do I prove that? Because in the case of father, you chayev a more severe punishment. So I use mezid to reflect on the nature of the avera. Now in the case of shogeg, when I violated that avera, although b'shogeg, but I'm chayev golos as a kapara for the avera. Right, as we discussed a million and one times in this parak, even shogeg is an avera. And therefore shogeg incurs a punishment. There was an element of negligence.
Right.
And for that negligence, you need a kapara. But can we give you a kapara for a more severe avera? That we don't know.
Shogeg is not misasik. It's this. It's
right.
Some negligence.
It's negligence. And you can have an avera.
But again, you're lacking the kapara. And the kavona, it makes a distinction when it comes to sayif or chenek.
You're lacking the kavona, but you're violating the same identical avera.
So without the kavona, it's a major issue.
But again,
you can't.
But Rabbi, you have to.
The avera is worse.
What I need you to do is conceptualize the avera as a separate concept. Forget about mezid and shogeg. What the Gemara is pointing out is there's something called an avera. It's the losa said in the Torah. The Torah says, thou shalt not kill. Again, there are many different perforations and situations, scenarios, of how you implemented that ritzicha, that murder. But at the end of the day, in all those different expressions of avera, of murder, it is the same identical avera. And therefore, the avera in the case of a son is more chomer than in the case of someone who's not a son. Who says that the Torah for the violation of that avera is going to allow you to have that kapara?
The chiddush is a filu b'shogeg.
But again, keep in mind that this whole sugya rests on one premise: that chenek is more severe than sayif, and that's the premise of Rav Shimon, as we'll soon see. I first want to answer Jonathan's point, but as we'll soon see, the Rabbanan never bought into that.
I cheated
a little to have. So should I read just one more line?
Yeah,
okay, let's just read one more line. L'Rabbanon, however, the Amri Sayif Chomor Michenek, which means that if a son kills his father, what punishment will be meted out? Sayif, we're not going to upgrade it because Chenek would be downgrading, right? So in other words, if a son wounds his father, then he will get Chenek, which is a lower echelon punishment according to the Rabbanon. If on the other hand he murders his father, or for that matter anyone who murders anyone, we get a more strict punishment, namely we upgrade it to sayiv. Therefore, horeg aviv bishogeg shigigas sayiv, who, if a son kills his father, inadvertently it's no difference in terms of the Chumas Avera than anyone who kills anybody. And the Torah says that Shigiga Saif Nidna Lakapara, we're going to afford you with this boon, you know, this gratis gift of kapara by going into Golos. So therefore our Mishnah, which says that a son who kills his father goes into Golos, reflects the Shita of the Chachamim. The Bryce on the other hand says Rav Kahana, that says that he doesn't go into Golos, reflects the Shita of Rav Shimon. Go ahead, Jonathan.
I was just going to point out that according to the next part where Rava has an alternate answer, you have to go back and deal with, well, according to that answer, we disregard this logic. So one of the reasons...
Can I just reformulate your question? You're asking...
I'm just pointing out that the distinction between the Shogeg and Mezid,
right,
that very well could be according to Rava.
No, but I'm just saying, let me formulate your question. Your question is, and you're already giving an answer to the question, but I want to formulate the question. Why is Rava going to reject Rav Kahana's answer? And you want to suggest that maybe Rava just completely reject the whole logic of Rav Kahana. In other words, the very premises that Rav Sachnowitz is having trouble, he's grappling with, he's wrestling with, maybe Rava in fact never bought into that thesis. But I'm not sure that we have to go down that road. We could say that Rav is just not interested in separating the Mishnah from the Braisa by using a machlokas tanoim, and then you're binding us to that ukimto. Let's see if Rav's answer will, in some sense, clear us of that restraint. Rav Amar. Rav says I can reconcile the stira between the Mishnah and the Braisa in a much more simple way. And the Braisa is not talking about a case of a son who kills his father b'shogeg, because Enochinami, if a son kills his father b'shogeg, even according to the Braisa, the son will go into Mezid, which can reflect the sheet of the Chachamim, so there's no need to push the Braisa into the very square peg, the narrow peg of Rabbi Shimon. You don't have to do that. But rather, the Braisa is talking about a case of a son who wounds his father. Keep in mind, All it says in the Braisa are four words. I mean, five words, sorry. It says, Makeh Nefesh, Prat LaMakeh Oviv. It doesn't say, Prat LaHoreg Oviv. Says Rava, Prat LaOseh Chabura, BeOviv, BeShogeg, that he doesn't go into Golos. Now, Rabosai, before we, if you can, without cheating, cover the Gemara, what questions can Gemara ask over here? You're telling me that we need a drasha in the Braisa to derive the conclusion that a son who wounds his father b'shogeg doesn't go into Golos. Anybody have a question? Ooh. Did I fall in it? This was a dud? Yeah. Again, is his father alive or not alive?
He didn't kill him.
He didn't kill him. So you're going to send him into Golos when he's not dead? Like, what's going on here? Like, what were you thinking? So the Gemara asks that question. I would have thought, since for this aver of wounding his father that he done it deliberately, Bark told him, the Torah says he gets chenek, is b'shogeg nami ligle. In other words, we can upgrade the nature of the aver and its severity of a wounding of a father to that equivalent to killing a person, because in both cases it's considered a capital crime, and therefore in the case of shogeg he should go into Golos. The Torah says, Makin Nefesh, which means you killed him, therefore you go into Golos, prior to the exclusion of someone who wounds his father. So again, Jonathan, if you ask me what Rava has, you know, against Rav Kahana here, my personal feeling is that he thinks he can sideswipe the whole thing by reading the Braisa meticulously. The Braisa is clearly not addressing a case of a son who kills his father, who would in fact go into Golos. Why would the Braisa disagree with the Mishnah?
But he still has to reject Rav Kahana's answer. In other words, according to Rava, both if you the Mishnah and the Braisa don't contradict. In other words, a son can be Gola by killing his father.
But that was never an issue with this Braisa.
Exactly, it was never an issue because one Braisa is talking about killing, and one Braisa is talking about killing, and the Braisa is talking about hitting. So according to that, like everybody in the entire Jewish world agrees, Ben Golali Dao.
Not necessarily.
So that's how. So
not necessarily, because keep in mind that in a machlokas between Chacham and Reb Shimon, we pass like Chachamim.
Well, no, Rabba doesn't even see. Rabba doesn't even need to establish it as a machlokas between Rabba and Chacham.
No. What I'm just suggesting the following. No,
sorry.
What I'm suggesting is, again, I don't want to get too bogged down in this. I don't think it's a major point, but Rava embraces every premise of Rav Kahana, namely that there's a fundamental difference between the Chacham and Rav Shimon about a son who kills his father. Would a son kill his father going to Golos? But the Mishnah is not interested in Rav Shimon, because Rav Shimon goes down in the annals of history, and it's very lumpish, and we should study Rav Shimon, and it's very, you know, it's part of Pilpula Shel Torah. But it has nothing to do with the Mishnah. The Mishnah reflects the sheet of the Chachamim. Rav Kahana is right that according to Rav Shimon, a son who kills his father would not go into Golos. That's great. But why introduce that in the context of this brisa and force us, or in a sense twist the arm of the brisa, to be reflective of a sheet of the Rav Shimon? Who wants to do such a thing? I would even tell you further, but again, this borders on Talmudic history, or the science of the Talmud, and you could ask, Dan, are you able to join us? Because the coal is learning inside there, and you'll be at Center for Minyan for Myra, so hang in there. Can you get through?
Yeah.
Either this way, that way, whichever way you want. Okay. So, Rabosa, what I'm suggesting is that in a scientific sense, if Rebbe, when he wrote his Mishnah, was concerned with the sheet of Rav Shimon, maybe he shouldn't have left it out for the Brisa. Let me explain what I mean. In Masechta Sanhedrin, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is going to record both sides of the controversy. Namely, whether Chenek is more Chomer than Saif, or whether Saif is more Chomer than Chenek. If, having granted that, there's a tremendous spin-off, an afkamina, as far as a Golos situation in Shogeg, why didn't Rebbe once again reiterate the two sheetahs, that of Chachom and Reb Shimon? And that's a very valid question. But I think the answer to that might be what's called machlokas v'achkaf stam, that sometimes Rebbe, even though he records machlokas in a later Mishnah, he'll drop the minority view, the dissenting opinion, in favor of the Chachamim. And therefore, when we get to the Brisa, it's hard for us to believe that there was a, at that historical period, a push to formulate the sheet of Reb Shimon as far as Rotzeh Peshogim is concerned. And Rava obviates the need to do so. But I think, more important than anything, Rava is actually reading the Brisa. Now, I want to study with you for just 1 minute. This is my own idea, and I see if you'll be the jury if I can bounce this off you. The Havamina, if not for this Brisa, was that a son who wounds his father goes into Golos. And the Gemara takes that and analyzes that under a microscope. Had he done the same act, this son, excuse me, the Mezid, he would be Chayiv Misa. Therefore, if he does Peshogi, he should be Chayiv Golos. I want to just point out that Golos is called an ear miklat, correct? Miklat means what? Refuge. To protect him from who? From the Goel Adam, Rabosai. Where is the Goel Adam over here? The father's walking on 2 feet. You know, he may have gotten a scratch. You know, maybe he took a stitch or two. I don't know what. But he's perfectly healthy. There is no Goel Adam over here.
He didn't kill
him. What do you mean a Goel Adam? You can't have a Goel Adam if there's no... If
he killed his father.
No. In the Havamina, we would have thought, says the Brisa, that if he wounds his father, he should go into Golos. And the Gemara analyzes that, right?
There's some dots, Philip.
Well, I think your question is even stronger. But
Goel Adam means Shvichas Dovin, meaning it means murder, you know.
If you read like the entire parsha of Golos, it's like it's a constant comparison between murder of Bishogeg and murder of Bimazin. It's like, well, there's no blood because it was Bishogeg, but if it was Bimazin, then you kill him. It's back and forth constantly. It's like the Torah most views like Shogeg is only like a kind of murder. There are two categories of murder. So it's like, why do I mean like Makan Nefesh? Oh, it's because of this one word Nefesh that I knew. It's like the entire context of the entire parsha. It's very clear talking about murder and murder only.
So I don't see, are you answering my question or strengthening my question? No, are you adding salt to a wound? Maybe you're making my question stronger, but I'm looking for an answer to my question. Again, let me just reformulate my question, Jonathan. Can you either sign on to my question or answer my question? I'm asking the following. Miklat means to protect you from a goel adam. How could the Gemara even raise an eyebrow, raise the possibility in its mind that a wounding situation would require miklat? He's going to run to their miklat. Who is he protecting himself? So does Gemara have a hamamin as Aaron would say that the father could kill his son because he never has a scratch in his body? And you know, he went to a plastic surgeon. The plastic surgeon told him that no one will ever even know that you had that scratch. I'm just joking with you, but you follow my point. Is it a hamamin that the father's going to kill his son as a goel adam?
He chopped off his arm.
So I'm telling you, I don't believe for 1 minute that's what's going on. I believe that there are two dinim. I'll give you a brisket say dinim and golas. Golas has two dimensions to it. And I think the primary dimension is not refuge. That's the secondary dimension. The primary dimension of golas is punishment. Or to be more precise, kapara. You did a terrible thing. You did a pishogeg, but you did a terrible thing. You know what? Sweat it out. Pack your bags and reestablish your domicile in an ir miklat. Again, we're going to have sugyas later on that an ir miklat is not the most, you know, it's not the worst place in the world to live. But you know, I got a job next door to Malcha. You know, I don't want to move to the ir miklat and live with a bunch of levim and a couple of ropes there. So I think what the havamina is, that in the case of a son who wounds his father, this is my own idea, and I have no support for this, the havamina of the son going into golus is not b'toras miklat, not midin goel adam. There is no goel adam. The father is absolutely healthy. He's fine. But rather b'toras kapara. And what's going to, excuse me, determine the nature of kapara? What would engender the obligation, the requirement of experiencing golus for the son in order to achieve kapara? The aver itself. And since this aver is absolutely analogous to ritzicha, as far as the aver is concerned, haraya, had he done this exact action deliberately, be eidin v'asro, we would give him panic and do away with him, we would execute him. That itself shows you that this avera requires the same, shall I say, profound and radical kapara experience as a ritzicha mamash. So in Hilchas Avera, he deserves golus. That was the hot. But not the Torah's goal or not.
A father and a son are going on a teal together. The father falls and his son happens to be a doctor. And he breaks his leg or something. And in order for the son to help his father, he has to draw blood.
Right.
That's the issue of the Torah. Right. Is that considered shogeg? No.
That's onus.
That's onus.
It's even more of an onus. It's mitzvah. Now, in Poskim, there's a whole deal with, you know,
doctor, dentist for the father and stuff,
yeah,
like
and
that.
Surgeons and so on and so on. And basically, the Poskim will say the following, that this is the almost unanimous opinion as far as the best of my knowledge. If my son is the best surgeon I can get, or he's the only one around,
right,
forget it. There's no way out here. I gotta, whether I pay him or not is a different question, but I have to hire him as my surgeon.
You use him. So it's not a din of chabura, obviously. It's a din of refuah.
Refuah, it's a mitzvah.
A mitzvah.
But that's not the case that we're addressing.
No.
Okay, fine. Let's go on to the Mishnah. Hakol golen al yidei Yisrael. Okay? And the Mishnah continues, Yisrael golen al yidei. So the Gemara says the following. Hakol golen al yidei Yisrael. Everyone, anyone who kills the Yisrael goes into golus. Lasuye mai. What is that coming to teach me? You know, the Mishnah doesn't even give me a clue. Here's a clear-cut case where, without the Gemara, I don't even have a clue how we would interpret this Mishnah. So the Gemara postulates, le'asuye eved v'kusi. Anyone who kills a Jew goes to Golos, even if He is an Eved. Leave out Kusi for a moment. We'll come back when we head to Kusi. It means that this Eved, in the Chiddush of the Mishnah, is considered Yisrael. He's a full-fledged Jew as far as the law of Golus is concerned. Golus is given to every Jew, including an Eved. Why would I think differently? The answer is we're talking about an Eved Kanani. So the Chiddush here is that even though, as we discussed before, a Ger Toshav has a partial Geris, but he's not a Yisrael, he's still considered within the Klal of Goyim, you know, he's only chayv in 7 mitzvahs. Nevertheless, once we hit the Eved Kanani, we've hit the jackpot, and an Eved Kanani is a Yisrael. And therefore, if an Eved Kanani kills Yisrael, he goes into Golus. Now let's flip it around. What happens if Yisrael kills an Eved Kanani? He's chayv Golus. In other words, the Mishnah is saying that once we establish the bar, the standard for who qualifies as Yisrael, then it goes both ways. He, as a Yisrael who kills a Jew, goes into Golus, and Yisrael who kills him, insofar as he's a Jew, will go into Golus. And we pass the bar, we pass the minimum, once we hit Eved Kanani. Then we get to Kusi. Kusi, my friends, is a gigantic sugya in Masechta Chulin as to what his status is. According to Rabbi Meir, a Kusi is called a Ger Emes, which means that even though some of the Kusim were motivated to convert for ulterior motives, there was a certain fear that they would be killed and so forth and so on. But nevertheless, your average Kusi, your rank and file Kusi, stams, you know, he comes from the Geri Emes, those who were, shall I say, sincere about becoming converts. The other opinion maintains that they were Geri Arayos, which means they were motivated to become Gerim for ulterior motives, and that day approves in Masechta Chulin Daf Vav that they were not serious at all about being Gerim. They continued to worship idols and so forth and so on. This Gemara would seem to reflect the Shita of Rabbi Meir that Kusim are Geri Emes, and therefore their status is equivalent to that of any other Jew. And Tnina Laha, and we also learned this in another Mishnah, the Tanur Rabbanan. Now I'm saying we learned in a Braisa what we learned in the Mishnah. Eved Vekusi Gola. Okay, and I'm going to skip up for a minute, Loke. And then Yisrael Gola Al Yidei Kusi V'Eved. Which means that we have here an explicit Braisa that reflects the Shita, that the status of both an Eved and a Kusi is that of a Yisrael, without any hair's breadth of a difference, as far as the Chiyuv Golus is concerned, they're considered Yisrael.
Why would Kusi be a Chiddush?
Well, again, so this Bryce is coming to tell you that we accept the Shita of Rabbi Meir, against the Shita of many other Tanoim.
Maybe you can say the other Shita, that since he converted, even though he had ulterior motives, he's still considered Yisrael.
No, but that Shita holds that he can't eat from the Shechita in the Masechta Chulin, he can't marry into the Jewish fold, he's not considered Yisrael. Maybe that's the Sugyan Chulin. I can't rewrite the script. So the Gemara says if that Gerim was Geri Arayos, that's not considered Gerus.
They also say that if the mitzvahs that they were...
So I have to. I remember the sugya, but I don't remember the details. I'm not sure if it. I think
there were certain mitzvahs that they were
right. I think there were sacraments.
Very strict in those.
Yeah. Mitzvahs. Just let me just say something. Again, you'd have to check me on Chulin Daf Vav. But if I remember correctly, again, I learned Chulin many moons ago. But what I seem to remember is that even according to Rabbi Meir, the original Kusim were Geri Emes, but in the next generation they started worshipping idols. And therefore they had a din of a Goy, Because an Ove Kochavim has the din of a Mumrel called Tarkula, he can't trust the Shechita, you're not allowed to test, he can't accept his testimony, etc., etc. And in that context, the Gemara says that there were mitzvahs, that despite the fact that they worshipped idols, that they were very careful about Hechzikah Bem Kusim, and they were even more strict than Yisrael, and there we can trust them. But at that point, since their original gerus and that of their parents was valid according to Rabbi Meir, because they were Geri Ames in the first generation. Those who reject Rabbi Meir, they hold that this Avodah Zarah business was going on in the original generation, the first generation of Kusim, and therefore there was never gerus on the part of Kusim. Rabbi Meir holds no, it was only in the second generation that they veered off the path, but the Gemara establishes, since they're still Jews, we can trust them on certain issues where, despite the fact that they're over the Avodah Zarah, they were very careful. Again, that's the sugyan chud. What we have to get back to now, and we only have 2 minutes, is to see this Gemara. The Gemara says, Bishlema Ebed Vakusi Golal Yidei Yisrael, that I understand, but Loke, this I don't understand. And the Gemara here postulates a difference between Golus and Malkus. Right? Gola is a case of Katle, right, where the Eved or the Kusi killed the Yisrael. But Loke, the Gemara says, is Delite. Lite means they curse the Jew. Now, again, it's the whole Sugin Shvuas, but Makalis Chavero Bishem, if he invokes the name of God, violates a Losaseh, and even though it's a lav shem bo maisa, it's only dibur, nevertheless the Gemara says yechayv malchus. And the Gemara has a special limud to prove to establish yechayv malchus. So now, if a kusi or an eved cursed a Jew, the Brisa is telling us that he's chayv malchus. Says the Gemara, how could this be? Bishlema gole the katle, I understand that this Eved Akusi should go into Golus because he killed the Jew B'shogeg. Elo loke amai. What are you going to tell me? It's Chayev Malkus. And again, it goes both ways. Either if the Eved Akusi cursed the Yisrael, or the reverse, the Yisrael cursed the Eved Akusi, the Brice is established Chayev Malkus because lightning cursed him. That doesn't make any sense. The pasuk which prohibits cursing is V'nasi B'amchalo Sa'ur. You should not curse a prince amongst your people. And the Gemara darshins be osa maisa amcha. This only applies to a Jew who is noe committing Yisrael. He's absolutely dedicated to the mitzvahs of Yisrael. And that could be true in the case of an Eved Kanani, but it's not true in the case of a Kusi, who's not noe ki Yisrael, even according to Rabbi Meir. Even if I grant you that he's chayv golus in the case of Ritzicha, because, or if he's killed by Yisrael, because he's a Jew. In other words, they were Geri Emes, but nevertheless, in the generation afterwards, right, the second generation of Kusim, since they worshipped Avodah Zarah, they cannot be considered osei maisa amcha, and therefore the Iser Klola does not apply to a Kusim. How, therefore, could a Jew possibly be Chayav Malkus for cursing a Kusi? Okay, Rabbosai, we're close to the end of the sugi, but it's 9:30 already, so I think we'll have to curtail it here, and Bleed Editor will finish this up very quickly at the beginning of next week. I think we have a minion, so hang in there.